Iku iluna. Please rise. Ohea oko eko ka aha. Inahe kuiana imua okea. Aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ki e hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. I nai mai, i malio mai, i lohi ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. I noho i lalo. Please be seated.
Please call the case.
Calling case number SCWC-17-432, Frederick Nita versus Department of Human Services. Arguing for the petitioner, Department of Human Services, Aaron Lau. Arguing for the respondent, Frederick Nita, Eric Seitz. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Ms. Lau. Mr. Seitz, are you both ready to proceed this morning? Mr. Seitz? All right. So, Ms. Lau, you'll be going first. You've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light 10 minutes in. Mr. Seitz, we'll also give you with 10 minutes to go, pardon me. And Mr. Seitz will give you a warning with 10 minutes to go as well. Please proceed. And I'll, for both of our counsel, when you argue, if you want to take your mask off at that time, that's fine during the time you're arguing. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. Through the Affordable Care Act, Congress appropriated funds to provide enhanced payments, which are bonus payments on top of the regular physician rate, to certain physicians. Physicians with a primary specialty designation in family, internal, and pediatric medicine. The terms of the statute are clear and unambiguous. The statute listed three specialties. It was not an inclusive list. The statute did not say including but not limited to these specialties. It was an exhaustive list, a primary specialty in family, internal, and pediatric medicine. That's it. Congress appropriated funds to give bonuses to these specialists in their provision of primary care services to the Medicaid population. Congress did not appropriate funds to incentivize any other specialties. Consistent with the statute, the hearings officer concluded that Dr. Nita was not eligible for the bonus payments because his primary specialty was obstetrics and gynecology, OB-GYN, and not family, internal, or pediatric medicine. And this is finding of fact number 39. Supporting finding of fact number 39, the hearing officer also found that Dr. Nita listed OB-GYN as his specialty in his national provider identifier and his Hawaii Medicaid enrollment application. This is uncontested finding of fact number 29. Dr. Nita did not list any other specialties.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Lau, but can you help me as to the breadth of the determination that needs to be made by DHS as to determining a primary care specialty? In other words, you've just identified the way in which Dr. Nita had identified himself formally as being a gynecologist and board certified. Is that enough, or can the department consider more, such as in the amicus, there's a lot of other information, as you know, that has to do with his history of being paid as a primary care physician. And in addition to that, members of the community that have identified him. And then there's other information that I think is in the record about how there was actually an audit by the Hilo Medical, the Hilo Hospital, as to his charges, and indicated that there were a lot of services that he performed that were primary care services. In fact, I think they calculated it was even more than 50%. So can the department consider that, or does it just consider the self-identification of the doctor as to his board-certified specialty?
So to kind of break out your question into maybe even three parts, the Medicaid provider enrollment, this attestation form, these are the process by which Dr. Nito would have attested.
I couldn't hear what you just said.
The attestation form and the Medicaid Hawaii provider enrollment form, these are the processes by which Averitt and CMS says this is how they attest. This is the designation process. And if your question is, can the department check that against other sources? Absolutely. When a Medicaid provider submits their provider enrollment form, they write their specialty down and DHS checks it against their national provider identifier. And in this case, Dr. Nita's national provider identifier lists OB-GYN as his primary and only specialty.
Ms. Lau, if I could, that is correct. I believe back in 1993, he identified OB-GYN, but when he filled out or did the attestation, or when someone in his office did the attestation, and of course, I don't believe we have that actual attestation in the record. There's a lot of testimony about it. We do have the form or the questions, and the question says, which is DHS's form, physician must attest that they practice family medicine, general internal medicine, or pediatric medicine. So is it the attestation that the physician makes in 2013, in this case, Dr. Nita, or is it what Dr. Nita put down on the form in 1993 that's dispositive of what his designation is?
So it would be what he put down in 1993, because in this case, he did not update his provider application. You know, the provider is responsible for updating their application, you know, when they move offices.
But your own form said attest to it. So why, if that's the case, why didn't, and when I say your form, I mean DHS's form, why didn't DHS just refer to whatever designation you have in when you signed up for the program or to participate? Why did it ask for what appears to be a current attestation?
Because the CMS rules that were promulgated required the states to create an attestation form process. It was actually in the comments to the final rule that there was a comment asking if states could use their provider enrollment form, and CMS kind of skirted the issue and just talked about, you know, the billing code requirement.
There's no dispute here that Dr. Nita was attested to be one of these primary specialty designations, correct?
If you're based on the attestation.
Although the form's not in the record, there's no dispute that there was an attestation that he was one of these primary specialty designations.
Correct. There's no dispute that someone in Dr. Nita's office attested on behalf of him. And there is a dispute as to whether he self-attested, and DHS found that he did not self-attest based on his testimony at the administrative hearing.
Tell me why that is. Because his testimony says over and over again, I treat people for primary care. They come in and see me. I provide this care. This is what I do all day long. So how is it that they could find that that's not the case?
You know,
that he didn't attest properly, I guess.
The CMS rule should be given, CMS should be given its deference in interpretation of its rule. And its rule says that the physician or the provider who's receiving the payments must self-attest. They must be the ones, you know, saying that these statements are true.
But doesn't that open up the possibility the physician could say, this is what I now do? And he could truthfully answer that, which apparently he thought, well, I guess his office person, staff person thought he didn't, you know, this is what I do. This is like more than there's a whole bunch of what I do is primary care. And why isn't that sufficient? If that's the test that CMS said is make him attest and he attests, why isn't that the end of the discussion? And if it's not the end of the discussion, then what's the proper inquiry to inquire into the validity of his attestation?
So CMS,
two-part question.
No problem.
Apologize.
CMS interprets its rule as a two-step process, and it's basically three requirements. First, there's a self-attestation, and that self-attestation by the person receiving the payments, you know, self-attests that they have a primary specialty in these areas, and that first step is where is the core of this litigation, really, whether he has a primary specialty in family, internal, or pediatric medicine.
It's not actual primary specialty. It's primary specialty designation pursuant to the statute, correct? That's what's at issue here.
Yes. And the designation would be the attestation form or the...
Does your attestation form, I'm so sorry, does it require the physician's signature?
It was an electronic form. And so before you hit submit, there was a window that popped up that said, you are the physician. You understand that it could be a false claim, a risk representation to the state if you submitted this form on behalf of someone else.
Position that you cannot designate somebody to self-designate.
Yes, you cannot designate
now,
someone
to
self.
What if you have an office manager who is the office manager for 100% family medicine practice? And that office manager, makes a mistake and attests for the physician. So there's no compliance with your only physician can submit the form rule. Does that family physician forego enhanced payments?
Technically under the clear requirement of a self-attestation, yes. And I would like to...
Subvert the aim of the ACA's enhanced payments for services in these three areas?
And that
based
would be
just a simple clerical mistake?
No problem. That would exactly be what the Averitt Court is saying, is that the CMS rule subverts the legislative intent for getting these bonus payments to these certain physicians. The self-attestation form is a designation process created by the CMS rule.
But your process in this case, the process that DHS pursued, seems to have a boundary or have parameters that are decided by this Medicaid enhancements payment statute. And is there anything in the statute that says that there has to be an attestation, first of all, by the physician? And secondly, is there anything that says it has to be attestation that is of a specific statement of some kind? I just don't see that in the statute. And the Averitt case seemed to say that the final rule that was passed under the Medicaid enhancement statute was not valid because, it required things that weren't in the statute, right? Such as certification in a board certification in one of the specialty areas or the 60% requirement. So I'm a little unclear why we're spending so much time on what might be characterized as sort of a technical thing. I mean, you have a record of a doctor making it clear that he thinks he's a primary care physician and a doctor that hasn't been board certified, but now Averitt's clear that he doesn't have to be board certified. So maybe you could give me some help. Why is this issue about attestation and whether he necessarily filled it out so important? Is it because it's a rule that DHS has?
The issue of attestation or self-attestation is only relevant if the CMS rule is being upheld as valid, because that's where you get the self-attestation requirement. And Averitt invalidated the CMS rule and has left us with just a statute, as you mentioned. And so absent the CMS rule, saying you have to have a self-attestation, what is DHS supposed to rely on? And Averitt says, there is a uniform system in the Medicaid and Medicare area where physicians designate their primary specialty basically three times. They designate their primary specialty when they apply for a national provider identifier. They do so when they apply to be a Medicare provider. And they also do so when they apply to be a Medicaid
provider.
That's certainly
understandable. You want to be clear that there's an attestation that has credibility. And Mr. Cresta did quite a job in putting together an investigation and doing an inquiry that would seem to be appropriate in terms of testing whether or not it's true that this would be that the primary care was an primary source of the practice of Dr. Nitta. But now on remand, are you suggesting that the record's clear that actually Dr. Nitta didn't perform primary care services and didn't perform them sufficiently to qualify?
No, this case is not about whether he performed services or the quality of his care. It's simply about a two-year time-limited federal program where Congress appropriated funds to give bonuses to very specific physicians, these family, internal, and pediatric medicine physicians, to incentivize them to provide care to the Medicaid population.
I'm trying to understand your argument. Is it that the regulation is completely out the window based on Averitt, completely out the window? So your form, I guess, is completely out the window, and we only can rely on the statute. And because the statute says a physician with a primary specialty designation of family medicine, that is a term of art in the statute that refers to these designations that were made back in 1993 or whenever it was. Is that correct?
Correct. And so what Averitt says is that the term primary specialty designation is used in both the Medicare Enhanced Payment Statute and the Medicaid Enhanced Payment Statute. And because they use it twice with the exact same words, they should be interpreted the exact same way.
So my question is, if he signs up for this program based on the form, which implies at least one reading of the form is the physician must attest that they practice family, general, internal, or pediatric medicine, not that they were registered 30 years ago in that manner, is it fair to go back and recoup the money from someone who thought, based on this form, that he was entitled to sign up for these benefits? Is there sort of an element of estoppel here that might be operating against DHS in these circumstances?
No, and this is for two reasons. Based on the facts, he did not even know he was signed up for this program. He never relied on the attestation form. He had never seen the attestation form. Moreover, case law from the U.S. Supreme Court says that in cases where the government is collecting funds, there is no defense of estoppel, because this could, one, violate the appropriations clause, and two, it would violate public policy. It would cause the government to give out less information in fear that someone would misinterpret what they're saying. Here, DHS has been very clear from before the program even started that these funds were for eligible primary care physicians, and that meant someone with a primary specialty in family, internal, or in pediatric medicine.
I do have a question. You've said that because, and you know, Averitt says the rules differed on how primary specialty designation were defined for purposes of Medicaid as compared to Medicare. And so they threw out the rules for Medicaid. And you're not contesting that?
No.
And you're saying, so we're now back to the statute?
Correct.
And so, but you seem to be saying we should be applying the Medicare rules, which on their face do not apply to Medicaid.
So if I may continue what I was trying to explain before, is that Averitt said the word primary specialty designation means the same thing in both statutes, and CMS promulgated rules to interpret that. And we all know what the CMS rule for Medicaid was here, but for Medicare, what it was is that it tied the specialties, family, internal, pediatric, to CMS specialty codes that are in the Medicare enrollment form.
So that does get to my question. You seem to be arguing that because the Medicaid rules were thrown out, we must now apply the Medicare rules instead of going back to the statute.
Yes, and we get back to the statute because in the ACA, it required that that Medicare and Medicaid programs have providers put on their applications for enrollment their national provider identifier, which would include their specialty.
The statute says that?
In the Affordable Care Act, yes.
Does the Affordable Care Act have specific language stating that the determination of the physician's primary specialty for Medicaid enhanced payment purposes should be based on their initial national provider information identifier form or the state Medicaid provider application?
No, it does not explicitly say that. This is an interpretation by the Averitt Court, which is a federal court interpreting federal law. So DHS at this point has to find it persuasive. Moreover, CMS, again, this is a two-year limited program. CMS has never issued any guidance after Averitt.
Nothing in the ACA language, and sort of riffing off what the CJ asked you, is it your position that this specialty designation is fixed in time when the physician first filled out the national provider information, which in this case is actually more than 20 years after, you know, 20 years hence from when they're providing services?
For this specific case, yes, because Dr. Nita has never updated his application or his NPI.
Is it DHS's position that someone that is board certified in OB and gynecology can never be a primary care physician?
No. And this is, again, the core issue here. Dr. Nita does provide primary care services, but he does so as an OB-GYN. You know, when he provides reproductive health services like prescribing birth control or doing a pap smear, he does so as an OB-GYN. He does not do so as an internal medicine specialist. Similarly,
Wasn't the purpose of this statute to try to get rural coverage for Medicaid recipients? Because, you know, some physicians, there's so few physicians that will provide primary care services in rural areas to Medicaid patients because the recovery is so low?
No, this statute, the purpose of this statute was to get the Medicaid population primary care services from these specific specialists. It was not trying to increase the number of services. It was trying to increase where those services come from.
If I could ask you specifically about this point that's raised by Justice McKenna, because you've seen the legislative history that's recited in the materials a couple of times, the legislative history behind the Medicaid Enhancement Statute, where I think this is a House report, points out that the purpose, it says Congress intended the enhanced payments to apply broadly, quote, to primary care services furnished by any participating physician or health professional. And then it specifically says, not just a primary care physician or professional. So if I understand you, Ms. Lau, you're suggesting that if Dr. Nitta had provided the services he did, but he didn't do it in the context of performing work as a gynecologist, then he'd be eligible. But this seems to indicate that as long as it's primary care services, that's what was intended to be covered by the Medicaid Enhancement Statute.
I see my time is up. May I please respond? Please.
Absolutely.
I'm not, you said the House report, and I'm not quite sure where in the House report you're referring to. If you're talking about what the amicus submitted, you know, they cited to a bill, H.R. 3200, the American Affordable Health Choices Act of 2009, and they're citing to section 1721. And that is about getting payments, enhanced payments for primary care services. However, in the final version of the ACA, instead of adopting that section as it was written, the Congress tried to replicate the Medicare enhanced payment statute, which is in section 1303 or 1304, depending on which House report you're looking at. And in that section, you see it's a primary care physician, and that is defined as a physician with primary specialty designation in family, internal, pediatric, geriatrics, and obstetrics and gynecology. Again, in the final bill, we only have family, internal, and pediatric medicine. So the legislative history truly suggests that one, these bonus payments were meant for for physicians. They're meant to incentivize physicians, not incentivize the services. And two, Congress clearly intended to exclude obstetrics and gynecologists in from receiving these funds.
I have a question about Averitt before we hear from Mr. Seitz. You know, you're basically giving that opinion a very sweeping interpretation. My understanding is in Averitt, the doctors, it was undisputed that they had designated as primary care physicians whenever they signed up. That's not our situation here. So to the extent Averitt stands for the proposition that even the attestation requirement was invalid, isn't that not dicta? And shouldn't we be looking at that with fresh eyes in our particular, given the facts of our case? Kind of goes back to what Justice Wilson is talking about. In other words, interpreting in light of the purpose of the statute, the possibility that one could read the statute as envisioning a certification by the doc, this is what I do now, and that would still be legitimate. It would not be contrary to the holding in Averitt.
I think if that were the case, we'd have to do a heavy lift into looking into the legislative history. You know, the next section of the Affordable Care Act is all about workforce and how we're going to increase the workforce. It's not about how we're going to move workforce from one specialty to do other services. It's about how do we increase the workforce in these specialties.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for Mr. Seitz.
Morning. May it please the court. It's my unique honor to be here this morning to represent a doctor who is widely respected in his community for what he does. I also want to acknowledge the presence of Jeff Portnoy, who appeared in this case as amicus, attorney for amicus, the American Medical Association, and the Hawaii Medical Association in support of the positions argued by Dr. Nita. There are two critical points in the application for certiorari that I want to remind you of that are just flatly wrong. The first one appears at page 2, in which the state says, Dr. Nita is an obstetrician and gynecologist. He is not and never has been a physician practicing family, internal, or pediatric medicine as required by the ACA provision for enhanced payment. That's just flatly untrue. The second statement that I want to remind you of, which also goes to the Chief Justice's questions, where they seek to separate themselves from Averitt and distinguish that case, it says that the Averitt plaintiffs were clearly entitled to enhanced payments under the express terms of the ACA because they were family medicine physicians. Well, if that were the case, there would have been no litigation in Averitt because these physicians essentially were not board certified in any field. They were out in rural areas of Tennessee practicing. And when they submitted requests for the enhanced payments, they said, we're doing the work that the ACA wants us, encourages us to do. Therefore, we're entitled to these payments. CMS said no, and so the case ensued in the federal court, and eventually the Sixth Circuit said, yes, that's exactly what the Affordable Care Act wants physicians to do. Now, Dr. Nita set up his practice in the 90s in Hilo. He fully intended, as a board-certified OBGYN, to practice obstetrics and gynecology. But as we now know, and particularly from Mr. Portnoy's brief, we now know that there are enormous problems providing primary care services to people in rural areas, especially on the island of Hawaii, in the Hilo and East Hawaii areas. So Dr. Nita, by compulsion, when he took a patient, he was required to provide not only OBGYN services, but he was required to provide general medical services to these patients. And there's no question that he's been doing that overwhelmingly for years.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Seitz, but perhaps you could give some guidance about what is anticipated in the event that this case is remanded and there's actually, shall we say, an affirmance of the decision of the ICA, because I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a point being made by DHS that, okay, Averitt was decided, but we still have the lingering question of whether or not the designation within the Affordable Care Act of, in this case, I guess it'd be family medicine, applies, and that there needs to be a further analysis, not considering the attestation issue perhaps, and not necessarily considering the 60% requirement or the requirement of board certification. But let's go back and consider whether he actually was performing that as his primary specialty. So can you respond to that?
Well, first of all, the evidence in the record at the hearing is overwhelming that Dr. Nita was providing these services. No one ever contested the fact that he was billing for services other than primary services that are covered by the ACA.
Oh, I understand your point there, but what is the relief you're looking for?
Well, the real relief we want is we want this case dismissed, frankly, at this point. We want the affirmation of the ICA opinion and send it back, and they just dismiss this matter because, frankly, Dr. Nita is a primary care provider. Every insurance company in the state of Hawaii, and that was testified to in the hearing, designates him as a primary care provider and pays him as such.
But that this the ICA did remand, and it seems a little bit unclear what they were asking the trial court to do at that point.
Well, they did remand.
And the state, DHS is asking us to rule based on the statute. Is it not your client's position that this court can rule based on the statute, even if it's in your client's favor?
Absolutely. There's no question. And I think what you said earlier about the interpretation of the statute is absolutely correct. I mean, it's frankly, it's crazy to me in the state that we find ourselves with regard to primary care providers and the horrible shortages. It's crazy to me that the state is coming here and arguing that the ACA should be interpreted in some way to limit the incentives for people to practice primary care. That's clearly not what the ACA was intended to do. It was intended to help doctors, even doctors like Dr. Nita, who were board certified in specialties, to provide primary care services in areas where communities were underserved. And that's what this case is about. So I'd be more than happy for you to remand based upon an interpretation of the statute, which is, I think, the same interpretation in Averitt. There is no basis for distinguishing. That's exactly what Averitt held, that the statute was intended and was pushed through Congress by the Obama administration to expand primary care services for needy people who couldn't otherwise get them.
What's your response to Ms. Lau's argument that if you go all the way back to the actual language of the statute, it seems to, at least her argument would be, a physician with a primary specialty designation of family medicine, general internal medicine, or pediatric medicine. So her argument is that's the 1993, the designation he gave back when he signed up for the program. What's your response to that argument?
We don't dispute that that was the designation he gave and the intention that he had when he set up his practice. But as we all now know, the conditions have changed, and it became essential for doctors like Dr. Nita to provide services of a broader nature in his community. And when the Affordable Care Act came around, as you see in the record, he's not in this for money, but somebody suggested from Aloha Care that, look, you can get a higher rate because you're providing these services. So he applied for it, and they've been paying him. And he's entitled that money because he provides the services. If anyone were to argue, look, Dr. Nita, you're not really providing these services, and you're being paid for something that the ACA was never intended to cover, that would be a different issue altogether. But there's no dispute. He's getting monies that Congress intended him to be paid to encourage him to do what he does. Now, in Dr. Nita's case, even if he didn't get the incentive, he would continue to do this work. He's one of the very few physicians in the state of Hawaii who takes an unlimited number of Medicaid patients. Most doctors have a limit based upon their ability to afford to provide that care to people who only pay a minimal amount of money. But Dr. Nita's practice is over 90% Medicaid patients. He is the epitome of what Congress wanted to see happen and to encourage to get these payments.
How does the ACA define what a physician must actually do to be considered a physician with a primary specialty designation?
It doesn't specifically define. It basically says primary care services, such as those provided by people with certain specialty designations. It doesn't mean you have to be board certified. Most doctors in this country are not board certified. They go out in the community, and in Hawaii, you can do that just as well. You don't need a board certification.
It also doesn't mean 60%, doesn't mean that we can't have perhaps a staff, you know, put in a self-attestation or self-designation. Now, what DHS is essentially arguing is they're using the national provider information from 1993 and saying that Dr. Nita did not update his information. What's your response to that?
Well, actually, he did update it through somebody in his staff when it was called to his attention that he could be entitled to receive these enhanced payments, and he submitted the attestation through somebody on his staff. It's correct, he did not do it himself.
And under the ACA, is it simply a self-designation that's required?
Yes, and that's what Averitt says as well. Averitt says as well that these doctors in Tennessee designated themselves as family practitioners because that's what they're required to do in their rural areas, and therefore they were entitled to the enhanced payments.
Would it be considered a self-designation that Dr. Nita or his staff self-attested in what's been deemed a faulty DHS form?
Yes, it was faulty. Basically, obviously under Averitt has criticized the process, but what Averitt has essentially said and held is that it's the essence of what this doctor does that entitles him or her to the enhanced payments.
But Mr. Seitz, you're not contending that mere self-attestation limits the opportunity or the authority of DHS to investigate, right? I mean, it's in this case, the inquiry that was being made is something that would be consistent with the responsibilities of DHS to make a determination that the attestation was valid.
By all means, investigate. We will cooperate. We have cooperated. We've turned over records. We've allowed people to come in and audit his files. Dr. Nita has had two, as you look at the record, investigations. He was charged with fraud, which was a major embarrassment for the department when they came in and held a hearing in public in Hilo, and the hearing officer and then a judge basically threw out those claims. They've investigated him to the hilt. If they want to investigate him again, of course we'll cooperate. There's no question about what he does and who he is and how widely respected he is. And for them to continue to pursue this case, especially after the ICA opinion, which I thought was fairly clear and cogent and convincing, to me, I think is a further embarrassment.
What is the standard? If I understand what you're saying is, through the self-attestation, he in effect updated his designation, and that self-attestation designation is what the statute required of him. What's the nature of the inquiry that DHS can do? We're going to look at the sort of good faith basis for the doc calling himself or herself, you know, a primary care physician. This is the sort of like inquiry. We're going to talk to people in the community. We're going to go to the insurance companies, go to the other docs. And do you think that is a legitimate sort of means of ensuring that the program is in fact achieving its objectives? I'm just looking for what you think should be the case, because there are other doctors out there who may be affected. So
Sure. I mean, but you know, if a doctor makes a misrepresentation about what he or she is actually doing and bills for services that should not be covered under Medicaid or covered with the enhanced payment, I have no problem with the state enforcing its obligations in that area. But in this case, basically all they looked at was advertisements or web entries of some sort. And when they were faced with overwhelming evidence of what Dr. Nita actually does, all of the insurance companies supporting him, all of the patients and the people in the community supporting him, other doctors who testified, the evidence was overwhelming. And at that point, they should have backed off.
That would be the, I you know, the word I see is sort of like only one of the questions and answers that CMS put out said only physicians who can legitimately self-attest to a specialty designation qualify. So you would agree that that sort of inquiry into legitimacy is okay, or that's a step that can be taken by DHS?
Sure it is. And I think, you know, frankly, what triggered them was he's board certified as an OBGYN. So they asked the legitimate question, why is he billing for general medical services as a general practitioner? Well, an answer was provided, and they know the answer because they know that there are no general practitioners in East Hawaii who will take the numbers of Medicaid patients who need to be seen. They know that. They have their own statistics. The statistics are in Mr. Portnoy's brief. So I frankly think that this case is coming from someplace else, as I said. But in my view, we really shouldn't be here litigating these issues with regard to Dr. Nita.
Anything further from the court? Anything further, Mr.
No, Sykes? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lau. Your vote.
Thank you. The ICA's vacature and remand will cause the parties to relitigate the issue that has been at the core of this litigation. Since July 2015, months before the administrative hearing, DHS has been asking Dr. Nita to provide any documentation to show that he was eligible for the bonus payments because there was no authority to extend the bonus payments to any specialty other than the ones defined in the statute. And this is all contained in finding of fact number 41, uncontested. And Dr. Nita did not produce any documents before or at the administrative hearing to show that his primary specialty was in family, internal, or pediatric medicine. You know, my colleague, Mr. Seitz, says that he updated his national provider identifier. And in the record, when DHS checked at that time, this would be in the record, ICA docket 15, page or PDF page 1110. It still shows that Dr. and through 11, excuse me, it still shows that Dr. Nita's only and primary specialty was designated as obstetrics and gynecology.
But you would concede he's not stuck. In other words, that doesn't disqualify him from the enhanced payments and disqualify him from providing evidence that his primary care services were in the area of family practice.
I would say that this would disqualify from him from the enhanced payments because this is his designation saying his primary specialty was OB-GYN.
Okay, so from DHS's point of view, that as soon as that is seen that he has designated himself in the national provider identifier as a gynecologist, that pretty much disqualifies him.
He designated his specialty, his primary specialty. So and his only specialty, right? When you apply for a national provider identifier, you can list several specialties, but you always have to pick your primary specialty. Here, Dr. Nita only picked OB-GYN, and he only had one primary specialty.
This is the 1993 designation, correct? So I think Mr. Seitz is saying the statute anticipated that he could come in and identify another designation in 2013, and that he did so.
I would, you know, he's speaking to things outside the record, and this court may go to the CMS's website themselves and verify that statement. I believe if you do so, you will find that his primary specialty and his only specialty still remains OB-GYN.
There seemed to have been a lot of investigation into his billings, you know, the extent to which his billings were for family care. But now you're suggesting that really wasn't necessary because of the way that he identified himself as being a board certified gynecologist, and that was his designation and his provider as identifier?
Correct. So DHS, you know, they could have stopped at that first step and found that he did not have a primary specialty designation in family, internal, or pediatric medicine. But what they did was they just decided to continue the analysis anyway. And they found that he did not meet the 60% billing code requirement as well. And I just want to clarify for the record, and we DHS brought this up at the administrative hearing, you know, these codes that we're talking about, they're not specific to any specialty. They're not specific to internal medicine. They're not specific to OB-GYN. They are general evaluation and management codes. You could go to your neurologist on an outpatient basis, you know, get evaluated for your, you know, your irregular heartbeat and leave. And that physician, the cardiologist, will bill one of these general evaluation and management codes. They're not specific to any specialty.
You know, in Everett, the Sixth Circuit affirmed the district court's setting aside of the Medicaid rule. And when you look at the district court's opinion, it was 21 physicians in rural Tennessee. None of them were board certified in anything. And so they submitted a primary specialty designation under the Medicaid rule. They self-attested that they were in this area. It appears that the only difference between Everett and Dr. Nita's case is that Dr. Nita happens to have a board certification in obstetrics and gynecology, or I don't know if it's OB or OBGYN, but he is board certified in something else. But here, as in Everett, he self-designated. So why wouldn't Everett control this situation?
Everett does control, and Everett is about family medicine physicians who had a primary specialty designation in
eligible. These physicians were not board certified in anything.
Right.
They were family practitioners.
May I please finish?
Yes.
I see my time is up.
Please go ahead.
Yes.
Right. They're family medicine physicians. So when you look at, again, the CMS rule is a two-step process. First, you had to self-attest that your specialty was in these three areas, and that attestation had to be legitimate. So they passed that point. Their attestation was legitimate.
And because that's why they weren't board certified in something else.
We don't get to board certification until we've actually said your attestation for your primary specialty as family medicine is legitimate. Board certification and the 60% billing codes is the second step in the two-step process.
Right, but we're step two is gone already, because the rule is invalid.
Right. And your honor's question was, is Dr. Nita the difference between Dr. Nita and these family medicine physicians, his board certification? And I'm saying, no, the difference is that he did not legitimately attest that his primary specialty was family internal.
Because he was board certified in OBGYN and he had an OBGYN practice also.
No, because the DHS reviewed that attestation and they looked at all these different sources, including his NPI, his Medicaid enrollment, all these health, where how he, you know, puts himself out in the community. And these are uncontested findings of fact 29, I believe, and found that his attestation was incorrect. His primary specialty, his principal specialty is not family medicine.
So that I asked Mr. Seitz this question. You know, I understand you have an argument, which is, in 1993, this is what he registered as an OBGYN. He never followed the process, although Mr. Seitz would disagree, that was required to update that status. And therefore, he's stuck with that and doesn't qualify under the statute. I understand. I believe that's your primary argument. If we were to reject that argument and conclude that he can self-attest to something different from what he registered to in 1993, what then is the legitimate inquiry that the state can make to ensure that, or what is a proper inquiry to ensure that that is a legitimate certification? Is it the inquiry that was undertaken here? You know, there was a long thing about practice characteristics. So, or what is the appropriate appropriate inquiry? Has that inquiry already taken place, or should we remand for it to take place?
Yes, that inquiry has already taken place, and that would be findings of fact number 29 and even 29. And that's why I keep saying this is, we've been talking about this with Dr. Nita from July 2015, from before the administrative hearing. We've been asking him for documents to show that his primary specialty was, in fact, in internal family and pediatric medicine. And
but this is where we differ, because the law does not require that his primary specialty be in. It says what he designates as, right?
Wouldn't it be the same thing?
It seems to me there's a difference, that it's, does he designate himself as a primary specialty designation in one of these categories?
It has to be the same thing, because it would be a misdemeanor in Hawaii, and it would violate the federal law if you represented one thing to the state, but in actuality, it's something else in order to obtain a pecuniary benefit.
What designation would make it a misdemeanor?
Well, when you submit documents to the government to obtain any pecuniary benefit, you submit statements just like the attestation, just like his Medicaid provider enrollment. And when you submit those statements, you're saying that it's true. You're certifying that it's true. And if it's in fact not true, then he would be in violation of, I believe, HRS 710 dash. I'm sorry, I can't remember.
I'm sorry. I just help me understand this. So if he has a primary specialty designation for Medicaid purposes for those years, it's because it's only a 2-year period we were talking about, right?
Correct.
For those years in one of these categories under the statute, is there like another statute that says under Medicaid, you can only collect for OB services if you are you have a primary specialty designation of OB or something like that? I mean, is there a conflict somewhere?
I don't believe so. That's a very good question, Your Honor. You know, again, this is as you had said, it's a limited 2-year program, and the statute says what it says. It's for these specialists in their provision of the services.
And this is where I keep asking, it doesn't say for these specialists. It just says for the primary specialty designation, right?
Correct. And if you're these and family medicine,
because you seem to be sticking with the board certification requirement, like you have to be, you know, certified in internal medicine or family practice or pediatrics.
I am not sticking with the board certification requirement. Okay. The plaintiffs in Averitt were not board certified. That's why we got to the 60% billing code requirement. And, you know, for context, what you might be thinking of is people who are straight out of residency, who haven't taken their board exam, who haven't, or maybe they took it, but they failed it for some reason. Mm-hmm. You know, they can still practice family medicine. They're just not board certified.
Yeah, I'm looking at finding of fact 29. It just states it doesn't actually make a conclusion. It just recites a lot of different factual information. And all that is based on this inquiry into his practice characteristics, which came from the FAQs that CMS put out. So if we were applying the Averitt analysis, what is the authority for CMS and then DHS to come up with practice characteristics as being the test of whether his attestation is legitimate or not?
Well, first of all, I would believe that the government has absolute authority to review anyone's attestation. When I submit my taxes, I attest
totally
that it's
agree.
True.
I'm asking you, what's the content? What if we're going to craft or send this back for remand, what is the proper inquiry? And I think what you're saying is I want to be sure I understand. You would say it's the inquiry into practice characteristics, which is what culminated in finding of fact 29.
Correct.
That is the correct inquiry.
Correct.
And I'm asking where, if that comes from the FAQs issued by CMS, that's some, do you think that survives the Averitt analysis?
That, you know, the F.
Or is that just being made up out of whole cloth by the agency and we should just like Sixth Circuit say, you know what, that's just not there? Or perhaps your view is that is a legitimate exercise of government oversight authority.
It is a legitimate government exercise of government authority. You know, we, the requirement to recoup these overpayments, it's not in the Medicaid enhanced payment statute. It's in a completely different section of the Social Security Act, and we are obligated to recoup them. So we're obligated to see where we've made these overpayments and then recoup them and give them the funds back to the federal government.
I have one question. You know, you ask us to complete the Averitt analysis and decide that Dr. Anita is ineligible for Medicaid enhanced payments based on the record. Is there anything that prevents us based on the record of deciding that he is eligible for enhanced Medicaid payments and, as Mr. Seitz suggests, ending the case?
So Averitt is a court's interpretation of a federal law, and that would not be precedent over this court. It's not the U.S. Supreme Court. So to get to finding him eligible, this court would have to first disagree with a federal court interpreting a federal law, say that the statute is ambiguous, say that the CMS rule is appropriate, but CMS does not deserve deference in how it interprets its rule with regards to self-attestation, primary specialty, legitimate primary specialty, and the 60% billing code requirement, and that the findings of fact by the hearing officer was clearly erroneous.
I think we're getting back into the same dialogue you had with Justice McKenna. But okay, so in other words, you don't disagree that possibly, because you're asking for us to decide based on the record that he's ineligible, there's nothing that forecloses us by saying he is eligible, except your understanding as to the intent of the CMSA rule and the ACA.
Well, I believe Poe v. Labor Relations says that the appellate court, you know, can or and should affirm the circuit court decision even if it's incorrect, if the circuit court decision is correct and use the wrong reasoning, it can still affirm the circuit court's decision using the correct reasoning. And if the ICA and if this court is going to agree with Averitt that the correct reasoning is the Averitt analysis, you know, we're only left with the statute and we are only left with the directions that Averitt has provided us.
Anything further to wrap up for the court today, Ms. Lau?
Thank you. I just have to say that DHS does appreciate the care that Dr. Anita provides his patients, but this is not a case about the quality of his care or whether he was fairly compensated for the services he provided. This is a case about whether Congress appropriated funds for Dr. Anita to receive the bonus payments. The statute limited the bonus payments to physicians with a primary specialty designation in family, internal, and pediatric medicine, and that designation must be true. But Dr. Anita simply does not have a primary specialty designation in those areas. We have litigated this issue since the administrative hearing, and all the evidence in the record provided by DHS and provided by Dr. Anita shows that his primary specialty was obstetrics and gynecology. Nothing showed that his primary specialty was family, internal, or pediatric medicine. Therefore, the ICA gravely erred and created obvious inconsistencies in its decision when it vacated the circuit court and administrative hearing officer decisions because the clear findings of fact in the record showed that Dr. Anita never met the requirements of the statute. Congress never appropriated funds for his specialty.
Very well. Thank you very much, Ms. Lau and Mr. Seitz. The court appreciates your argument today and we'll take this matter under advisement.
Iku iluna, please rise. Ua ho'oku ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo ki ke hanahano o kamaku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.